Now here we are looking at one of the more troubling, problematic, difficult passages of Scripture that really there is. And I'm sure I've shared this with you before. The late John Stott, an Anglican prelate, wrote all kinds of really good books and all that, says the Beatitudes are part of the Sermon on the Mount, which is probably the best part of the best known part of the teaching of Jesus, though arguably it is the least understood, and certainly it is the least obeyed. And I would have to agree with that. And one of the reasons why is where the sermon title comes from. How is this possible? You look at what's going on in here, this blessed are the poor in spirit, or mourning, meek, hungering for righteousness and things. How? How do we do this? Well, the answer, of course, the short answer and the not very helpful one is that we don't. We try to. But on the whole, no one has ever kept this perfectly, and that's okay. We can try to do such things, but we need to remember always that when we do this, we're not in the fat part of what our culture says is important. One of the things our culture says overall is that we need to be successful. We need to be prosperous. We need to be influential. All of these things come together. And when you think of, a well-known politician, a well-known athlete, a well-known celebrity, and somebody else that's just well-known for being well-known. And when you think of these people, how many of them would you say fit well into the Sermon on the Mount? Probably not very many. The things that we are called to in the Sermon on the Mount, and particularly in the Beatitudes, are not the kinds of things that overall our culture says are important. Our culture doesn't say you shouldn't be pleasant or any of those sorts of things, but they don't tell you that you should either. Leo Durocher was a baseball player and a very successful manager. He had an autobiography called Nice Guys Finish Last. And when you think about that, that's very much the message of our culture, isn't it? Being nice doesn't do you any good. If you want to get ahead, you need to be tough. You need to be ruthless. You need to not care about other people. Well, I think that's what Paul is talking about in our reading this morning, where he says, for the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing. And when Paul quotes Isaiah saying, I will destroy the wisdom of the wise, the intelligence of the intelligent I will frustrate. We sometimes forget that God can be a little sarcastic, or at least the prophets can. And if we were going to think of that, we should probably put wisdom in quotation marks, that Isaiah is saying that God will destroy the wisdom of the wise. Because that's what we're told to do. To be wise is to take care of yourself first. To do what it is that you need to be successful, well off, and well known. That doesn't fit with Jesus' message. It doesn't fit at all. It doesn't fit with what Jesus demonstrated for us. So what do we do with the Beatitudes? Do we simply look at them as these are aspirational goals, fundamentally unreachable? We stick them at the back of our mind, and if it's convenient, we pay attention to them. Well, I would say no. I don't think that's what we do. There's nothing wrong with understanding or accepting or even being somewhat intrigued by the call of the world to be successful. Success is not sinful in and of itself. Let's make sure we understand that. But as a little thought experiment to go with the one where we're thinking of celebrities and such, try and remember the really important celebrities from the 1890s. I did this with people at Knox. We all seem to be drawing a bit of a blank. The only one I could think of who might possibly fit would be Nellie Melba as a celebrity. And then we have some prime ministers, perhaps, if we're historically inclined. But most of the prime ministers in the first few years after John A. Macdonald, who was no prize by himself, are eminently forgettable for most of us. But they were well known then. People hung on their every word. So being well known and all that sort of thing is not as important in the long haul as perhaps we might think. But when we think of the things that happened in the 1890s, when we think of, you know, there are certainly some inventions that happened, but when we think of other things, we began the process towards full voting rights for everyone, began in the 1890s. We began a bunch of different things in public health, in public education and things that are really extraordinary. We don't remember any of those people, at least not very many. And I would suggest to you that we don't remember them because they weren't interested in being well known. They were interested in being the kind of people who accomplish good things for God and good things for people and are unconcerned about what goes into that as far as being remembered and well known goes. Celebrity is just one of the most curious things that we have. For a long time, celebrity was it wasn't really known. You had notoriety, perhaps, but on the whole, this idea of being well-known because you're well-known. I think of Instagram, social media influencers. People who are influential because they influence people. Not because of any intrinsic value that they have, or any abilities, usually. It's just that happened to fall together for them. And I think it's a peculiar thing that we have. And it works at cross purposes with what we are called to do. We are called to influence people, to be sure, but only in particular ways. We influence people because of who we are, not because we want to influence them. When you get stuck with this idea that you want to influence people, well, then you're going to do whatever it takes to influence them. It's occasionally been ascribed to me. I've occasionally been told that I'm somebody who has a good sense of humor and can tell a decent story that's kind of funny. And I think that's true. When I first started preaching, when I preached from like a full manuscript and essentially read it, like wrote it out, went through a couple of drafts, and then read the thing out loud to people, trying to make eye contact whenever possible, I always wrote out anything that was going to be funny. People say, well, why'd you do that? You can tell stories. I said, yes, I can. The trouble is that if you're trying to be funny and suddenly you're not, it takes an immense amount of will and self-discipline to just let it die there and move on. What most of us try and do is try, well, okay, that one didn't work. I'll try another one. Well, if you do that in the pulpit, for better or worse, the easiest way to get people to laugh is to say something borderingly inappropriate. And people laugh, not because it's funny, but because they're embarrassed. It's an embarrassed laugh, but you get the laugh, and that's what you're aiming for. And I knew I could fall into that without any trouble at all. So if it wasn't written down on my piece of paper to be funny here saying these words, I didn't risk it. And that's one of the things that I worry about when we are pursuing success, influence, those things that the world tells us are important, that our culture says matter. Because if it matters for you to be influential, you'll do whatever it takes to influence people, rather than being you who you are to the best of your ability that is then influential to other people. It sounds similar, doesn't it? But it's completely different. If I influence someone to be a better person because they see how I live my life and they want to be like that, that makes me influential to them, but it doesn't make me an influencer. An influencer is somebody who spends every moment, every waking moment, figuring out how they are going to be influential. It's like setting your goals for a lot of people to come to your church. Well, if all you want are people to be sitting there, that's easy to do, is offer free beer. You will have a full church, even more than if you offer free coffee. Why? Well, because people like free things, and they're willing to sit still for whatever else happens if it's free. Does that mean your church is doing what it should because there's a bunch of people in it? Well, absolutely not. And I give full credit to my father for that particular example. It was the one he used whenever people started talking about church growth as if it was a thing in and of itself. Because it's not. We want people to come to church because this is a community of faith in which they get fed, in which they learn more about themselves as they relate to God and others, that they become more and more the people they were created to be, not people who are simply sitting here waiting for the payoff at the end. Living your life by the Beatitudes is unlikely to give you a big payoff in this life, in notoriety or money or any of those things. So why do it? Well, because at our best, we aren't interested in being well known. We're interested in doing well. We're interested in being that best person we can be. And I know we are because I've talked to you, and it comes out in different ways. We don't use that language very often. That's my language. But I see it and I hear it and I experience it in all of you, that you are doing your best to be the best person you were created to be. And if that somehow means you're called to be wealthy, then that's terrific, because that's your being who you are. Pursuing wealth just because it exists, because it's a goal to strive for, that's something different. When we practice the Beatitudes, we're practicing them out of the core of who we are, where Jesus is conforming us ever more to the likeness of himself. Because who practiced the Beatitudes perfectly? Well, if it certainly wasn't any person I know in a corporeal kind of way. It was Jesus. And the rest of us are just doing the best we can. We are trying to be reminded that being poor in spirit doesn't mean that we are depressed. That's something else. Being poor in spirit means that we are aware of how much further we have to go. That we are troubled by the difficulties of the world, and it affects who we are. And it's people like that who are called to pray, who are called to do the things that they are called to do to make the world a better place, out of that understanding that there is not enough evidence of God in the lives of the people around them. And those are the ones who get the kingdom of heaven. Being meek doesn't mean a doormat. I like the translation that Lyle read for us this morning, being meek and humble. Humility doesn't mean thinking you're worthless. Humility says, this is my worth. Where does it fit? And in these other areas where I'm not good, where I don't have that kind of capacity to do things, to say, I can't do that. That's what a humble person does. A humble person doesn't pretend they can't do what they can. They're just open about what they can't do. And they look for assistance there. For those kind of people, those are the kind of people who will inherit the earth. It doesn't say we'll inherit lots of money. We don't know exactly what Jesus is getting at entirely there, but those are the people who will create a difference in the world. If we practice the Beatitudes to the best of our ability, we may never be well known, but we will, without exception, make a difference in the world, in the area, in the context that we are in. Will we change everyone in the world? No. Will we change our families, our friends, our associates, our acquaintances, our neighbors? Yes, we will. We won't always know how, because often our most profound impacts on other people happen without us even knowing. Everyone, I suspect, has had at least one time where someone has come, and I've used this before, has come and said, do you remember when you said that thing to me? And you say, no, I don't. I don't remember it at all, because it was just something I said. And they say, that was exactly what I needed. Or when you just think of somebody off the top, you know, they come to your mind for whatever reason, and you drop them an email saying, I hope you're doing okay. And you find out later that came at the exact right time. Often you don't find out later, but it still did. Those are the things that we of us who try to do what Jesus is calling us to in the Beatitudes, who are willing to turn our back on the wisdom of the wise, the intelligence of the intelligent, those things that the world tells us we should be doing. Because it's when we turn our back on those, we turn our front towards Jesus. And that's when we continue to become more and more who we were created to be. We work towards the Beatitudes and what happens in there and in the rest of the Sermon on the Mount. Not because we know we'll get there, but because in the striving to get there, we make the difference that only we can make. So how is this possible? Well, it's not. But is it possible to make a difference while we're trying? Absolutely. Amen.